You are listening to a sermon by John Knopfziger, recorded on Sunday, May 19, 2019, at the Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Good morning. It's always good to be with you here. It seems it's our, as Andre says, our annual invitation. And a year ago, we were here, but with Amala Pulja Schenk, if you might recall, that MCC area rep. Some connection to the funks there. So, Evan, I had to have a little chuckle when the song that you said was too spry for us. Let's get back to some music we're more comfortable with. 2 weeks ago, I was in a rural community of Bebedo, Choco, Colombia. This morning, it took us a little over an hour to arrive to Point Grey Fellowship in a car. 2 weeks ago, we were on the river in a motorized canoe for about an hour and 15 minutes down river. The congregation was rather small. There was probably 40-ish or so around. But the music was very lively. And at one point, they invited this learning tour group of us, BC, myself excluded, MBs. And they asked us, or the group wanted to sing a song that was very important to us in the MB world in North America. And we sang the doxology, and it was a slow, plodding song to dampen the spirit that the good congregation there was leading. So I had a bit of a chuckle, and you made note of that today. So good to be here with you again this morning. April 2008, I was standing right over there. We had the congregation facing that way. I was here to share a little bit about Colombia at that point. We were part of the MCC-wide solidarity with the church in Colombia, Days of Prayer and Action. I don't know if any of you recall that, but we had a little basin there and we washed our hands and such. It was a wonderful day. The service focused on praying that violence would end and action, talking to governments to help take responsibility for the well-being of all its citizens. In 2015, I spoke here on Peace Sunday in November, and in the bulletin, I pulled this out here this past week as I was preparing. In the bulletin from here, there was a little thing about pray for Colombia as the peace accord has been voted in to begin. So the peace accord has been enacted about 3 years ago. We're in the third year now. There are a number of steps that will be coming to an end of that accord at the end of this year. I have also, besides the verses that were read, and you did a great job on those names. I haven't come close to that. One of the verses that was put out to us as we began our learning tour, maybe I should just say, I just returned from a MCC learning tour. There were 10 of us, and it was a bit of a shoulder tap of what we'll call influencers within the MB world here in British Columbia. So a part of that was the moderator, Sharon Simpson, and her husband, Gary, who is a pastor in Broadway, MB Church in Chilliwack, Brian Bourne, president at CBC, Myron Penner, who is quite active at Bakerview Church as well as at Trinity, amongst other things. He's the director of the Humanitas, the Mennonite Anabaptist Center there. Dennis Federal was a part of this trip. He was on staff at the MB Conference and Stewardship Ministries. And then the other folks were more related to MCC board members and some of the staff. This was really a trip that came after four years of prodding by three MB pastors from BC who were part of a national trip to Colombia in 2013. Some of you may know Ken Peters, or the name of Ken Peters, who's pastored at Saanich and had been part of the Faith in Life. And he wrote on that trip, or following that trip, that he was juxtaposing. He said, when I was in the U.S., I learned what it meant to be Canadian. When I was in Colombia, I learned what it meant to be Anabaptist. So that's what I want to share a little bit about that experience that we built upon, the whole idea of what it means to be church, an Anabaptist church, in a context of violence. So a verse that was shared with us on the first morning we were there is John 10:10. The thief's purpose is to steal, to kill, and destroy. My purpose is to give them a rich and satisfying life. So that's what I want to do today, is share some of the stories. That's the encouragement part of the church in Colombia. I had chosen that passage from that was read from Colossians there, of the greetings, because that's what I am hoping to do. And so I would like to offer a little bit of a May 2019 edit of that scripture. Maybe an edit would be just an addition. I would like to extend greetings from Rutilio, Manuel, Gloria, Javes, Adelia, Carolina, and many, many others. They send their greetings to you, members. These were all folks within the MB churches, so inter-Mennonite, you have those MB connections here as well. To the church, the MB church here in British Columbia, they extend their greetings. And I have been charged with a responsibility to share how they are enfleshing the gospel, how they are extending the good news. Very, very briefly, a context, where Colombia is. I mean, Colombia's been in the news. We all have our mental pictures of what Colombia is and the violence, and those are all real. But as I mentioned, in 2016, a peace accord came into place between the government and the major rebel group, FARC. They were promised, at turning in their armaments, they were promised a reintegration into the community. A lot of well-intended objectives, but think about if your only skill set you have developed over the last, the Civil War went on for 60 years, so we could generationally, the only skill set you had was armed violence and drug trafficking. You're not going to find a lot of employment opportunities in modern-day Colombia. So there's not a lot of hope in the process of that, from that side. In addition to that, it's a good business. War is business, was what was told to us. A lot of people are making lots of money through the drug trafficking. And then the government, on its end, sees this as a rural problem. If you're in the city of Bogota, you'd be walking the streets of Vancouver. Modern, high-rises up, traffic maybe a little more chaotic than Vancouver, but I don't know. I haven't been in Vancouver at 10 o'clock in the morning to know how that looks like. But you would never know there was a conflict, a civil war going on in Bogota. It is a rural problem. The government has ignored the rural existence. So that's some of the clash between these guerrilla movements of the government needs to take responsibility of all its citizenry, not just the wealthy in the city. again, we're in the year number three of a process that was to have some concrete steps in place after 3 years. There is little hope that those will be in place. And on the other hand, folks might not be wanting those to be in place because drug trafficking makes them lots of money. Brief context of the church. We were there to visit the church. MB missionaries arrived in Colombia in 1946, and this was about coincided with the time doors to China and Asia were closing. So, of course, we had to look for new mission fields to go to, and the way it was reported to us, Colombia had been considered Christianized through the Catholic context, but all of a sudden it was time for, as doors closed, this window was open to come and work at doing evangelical extension into the Protestant world. In the late 1940s, there was a decade of what they call la violencia, the violence. And that was really between the mestizo, or the Latin, Spanish-looking folk who spoke Spanish, were Catholic, and the rest of the people, mainly indigenous, Afro-Colombian, not Spanish speakers, not attending Catholic churches, they were Protestant churches. So there was a lot of conflict, and the Protestant church really suffered quite a bit of persecution during this time. This is when the MB missions came in, and 70 years ago, the first church was established in Itzmina, Chocó. I have pictures here, which I forgot to make arrangements for to show, so I had a map to help that, but when you get home today, pull out a map of Colombia and look for the Chocó, C-H-O-C-O, and that is on the Pacific coast west of Bogota. It is a jungle area. It's inhabited by Afro-Colombians and indigenous folk. Then throughout the 1960s, agriculture started to become mechanized, and there was rapid urbanization. The city of Cali was growing, so MB missionaries, in the word we heard, abandoned the Chocó and went into Cali to begin doing church planting there. This next comment comes a little bit with the perhaps the text that was read from Acts, where Peter had a vision. As the missionaries left, the fledgling church was left on its own to continue to develop its theology, whereas the outsiders were emphasizing a lot more on spirituality. The fledgling church looked at not only spiritual, but the material well-being, the physical well-being. It developed a practical ecclesiology, if you will. And that kind of focused on those people groups who were very family-oriented, mutual aid, helping one another. So that all became so integrated into the good news of how they wanted to establish themselves as a church. Today, I think we call that holistic ministry. A rich and satisfying life on earth as in heaven. And then finally, 20 years ago, MCC was invited to come to Colombia at the invitation of the churches, the Mennonite churches. There are three denominations, the MBs, Mennonite Church, and there is one BIC congregation in Colombia. The only partners MCC works through are these church groups and the various ministries or agencies that they have developed. So, those are greetings that come from Colombia. Words of encouragement to help us be encouraged that in the face of violence, the church is active and the church is making change. Take that motorized canoe and travel some 40 minutes downriver on a Saturday morning And you arrive at the Bocas de Soruco, at the MB Church there. And you'll see 60 children between the ages of 5 and 15, half in the church building and the other half in the school that is adjacent to the church. And they are learning peace-building skills. And this is material that MCC has brought there based on and adapted from the Peace Club work out of South Africa, Southern Africa. The younger children, as I mentioned, meet in the church, and the older ones in the school. And until recently, they had met out in the courtyard in front of the church. Until about a year ago, two armed groups decided this would be where they would carry out their armed gunfight battle to see who would have control of the cocoa production in that area. One pastor has put it this way: you can learn to live with fear the same way you can learn to live with disease or illness or with poverty or with riches. You just get used to it because it's going to be there. You get used to hearing shots at some point, and you just keep going. The work of the MB Church has kept going. These peace clubs have kept going. The children simply moved indoors. One of the principles of the essence of Anabaptists for the MB Church in Colombia states that the peace position is not optional. It is at the heart of the gospel. And then below that it says, it was costly to Jesus and can be costly to Christ's followers. The church is committed to living out and showing a different way of nonviolence. The church was not intimidated by the armed groups. Rather, they chose to stay and continue with the peace building program, the peace clubs. We are informed that parents are now beginning to inquire if they can also participate in this material, to be trained in different ways of interacting, because they have seen the difference of the children in their interactions. It gave me a bit of a fresh insight to the Beatitude, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God." Encouragement number one. Number two, let's hop back in our boat and travel back upriver, returning to Itzmina. But before we get to Itzmina, we pull off in a little village called San Antonio. And the partner group that we are meeting there is Fagrotes. In the Latin culture, you have these names created by taking letters of what the title is. So Fagrotes, the English translation would be Weaving Hope Agricultural Foundation. So, as you can get, they're working in agriculture to try to bring hope. And this, again, is a project of the MB Church. It is this project that probably had the greatest impact on me of the work that they are doing and the ministry, the livelihoods, the change that they are instilling in the population. Since 1980s, this is when the armed groups arrived in the Choco region, it has been kind of known for its cocoa production, and that's the plant that's used to produce cocaine. And as there were low returns on traditional crops as yucca, plantain, sugarcane, farming families were struggling to make ends meet. Growing coca was an alternative for them. It was a cash crop. It didn't require a lot of maintenance. It was easy to grow. And it provided income that was unmatched by any other work in the region. So farmers began. Members of the church family began planting cocoa. And you see, these farmers are so far removed from the process of this plant, which is used traditionally for teas as well, to its end product of cocaine and the devastation that has wreaked around the world, that they have given very little thought or even a chance to reflect on its devastation. And Bonnie Clausen, who is the MCC area representative for South America and Mexico, said this: rural farmers know that growing coca is illegal, but that's more abstract in the face of hunger. What is some of the costs, though, of growing cocoa? It has increased guns and has increased violence in their lives. As I mentioned in the previous example, various armed groups have battles between one another to see who will control the production and the flow of coca. And there's war, battles, gunfights between the military and groups. And then there are the governments, both Colombian government as well as international governments, in its methodology of eradicating coca is to do aerial fumigation with Roundup, which kills off crops. Not only the cocoa crops, but any other food sources you're trying to grow, rice, plantains, everything is just wiped out. So those are some of the ramifications of trying to grow coca. The risk simply became too high. So in 2009, an agricultural project, Fogrates, which I mentioned, project of the MB Church, came to the area. They began by distributing rice seeds and building a rice mill. This was to have farmers plant rice instead of illegal coca. An incentive was is that they had a guaranteed market. The church would buy their rice from them. So that was a good incentive. In 2012, they began distributing cacao. That's the plant used to make chocolate, which we enjoy. With the idea that after 2 years, they'd begin harvesting cacao and making incomes probably about double of what their traditional crops would be. So some 140 families have received seedlings of an old ancient variety, and then they have become established, and then Fogrates, through its technicians, go out and do grafting of improved varieties, higher yielding varieties into these trees. And as you can probably hunch, this is risky activity. You're taking the production flow of people growing coca and getting them growing other things. That interrupts the supply chain that some of these armed groups are not too pleased with. I should maybe mention that all these people, these technicians that manage and run and operate everything at Fogrates, from the management to the planting of trees to the distribution to the grafting to driving their boat up and down the river, all these folks are bivocational. They're all pastors as well. Pastor Rutilio Rivas, who is the director and the past president of the regional council of the MBs in Chocó, says he sees this work as part of the church's call to peace. We believe that peace isn't just about the absence of war. It means having adequate life conditions for people so we can help people live better than we are building peace. Charlotte just gave me the signal. I'm getting on in time here, so I'm going to have to speed up. This project is not without its challenges. There's the flooding that wipes out crops. There's the fumigations that I've mentioned. But there are also the human threats. A number of years ago, probably 5 or so years ago, messengers from an armed group showed up at the doors of Fagotes demanding that they pay a vaccination. Vaccination is a way to prevent bad things. This vaccination was to grant them some security and access up and down the river to visit farmers, to visit churches. The response that came from Fagotes, these folks who are the manager, the field supervisor, the canoe pilot, all pastors as well, was unheard of in this part of the world. They said to the group that they would rather close down the project than contribute to the ongoing armed conflict, that they are committed to nonviolence. We were told that there was a lot of fist slamming on the tables and screaming and threats of intimidation to get them to change and pay the vaccination, but they held firm and said, no, we won't pay. It was some hours later that the commander of the group called back saying that they would respect the church's position and they could travel the river without paying the vaccination. We want to see people live differently, that they're able to live better lives with dignity. Rutilio. I have come that they might have life and have it to the full. Jesus. Besides that ability for the church to travel, it allowed us, North Americans, to go in parts of Colombia that we would not be able to go to. The church enveloped us, and we traveled that river to that Boca de Soruco Peace Clubs and to the church in Bebedo. There were four pastors with us. They are known. And be assured that all the armed groups also knew that we were there. But because we were enveloped by the church, we were able to have fellowship with the MB Church in Bebedo 2 weeks ago today. Encouragement number three. We're back in Bogota. And this is the final encouragement. We are at Centro para la Capacitación de Niñas, or the Children's Training Center. We are in the outskirts of Colombia, Bogota, in a community called El Progreso. And for lack of better words, I'm going to call it a squatter village. Thousands upon thousands of displaced people, and currently those from Venezuela. There are over 1 million Venezuelans in Colombia today. Settle in this area. It's on a hillside. The construction is not the best. It was only recently, within the last 3 years, that they started receiving services such as electricity and water. But it's here that the family, the Navajo family, Juan Francisco, Amelia, and their daughter Lena, have moved to live in this village, this community, to lead the church that they have established there, the MBs have established, as well as give oversight to this training center. The training center provides basic education for 3 to 5 year olds, kind of preschool, if you will, as well as a food program. This is impoverished family, our area. Families are often single parent mothers who may be working in whatever trade they can, not giving a lot of attention, not able to give a lot of attention to their children. One of the best services that Adelia said that they are able to do is offer hugs to the children. Said they are able to also, because of their children's programming, offer workshops and seminars to parents who want to learn ways to change violent family dynamics. The way of love, peace, are central to our lives. This is the center, this is the core of the gospel, as Halidelia said. And it too can be costly. The previous couple with MB, church there, had received threats, death threats. So they had to move out. Already, the rumors are starting to circulate about the Navajo family. But they stay there. Remember? Following Jesus can be costly. I hope you have gleaned a sense of the encouragement I received, our group received, from visiting the church in Colombia. I was deeply, deeply impacted by the witness of the church there. And in one morning devotional, the president of the Cali Mennonite Church Council led us in a devotional, and he reminded us that, I quote, "The good news is not only being preached to the ends of the earth, it is also being preached from the ends of the earth." Amen.